The super duper revelation for me came when I was in China 2 years ago. As most of you know, this is like the second spiritual path for me. I grew up in a very religious, very conservative family, and my grandfathers were ministers. My brother was a deep spiritual seeker, and I studied theology in college and in seminary, and actually went to graduate school 15 years ago for a PhD in theology and dropped out. And through all that, I had never felt a pull to go to the Holy Land. I had never felt a pull to go to Palestine or Israel or Jordan or even to the old pilgrimage sites in Europe. I mean, I'd been to cathedrals in Europe and they're beautiful, but I'd never really felt anything there. But 2 years ago, I had this really sweet deal in grad school at USC, and part of the sweetness was I could go abroad to China for the summer free. And I knew that I'd want to go to Chan sites. So I applied for another fellowship, just a little bit more money, and I got that too. So there it was. So I was definitely pulled to our lineage. I was sort of walking back that cat. I'd been to Japan when I was a kid, so China felt like a next step. And without putting any thought into it, sort of four destinations came to mind, four main destinations. Joshu's Bridge, which is near the site where Joshu taught. Mount Tiantong, which is where Hongzhi was abbot and where Dogen had his own enlightenment experience. Guangzhou. There are two temples in Guangzhou that are associated with Bodhidharma, and I don't think there's anything there from 300, 400 BCE. There's a pagoda that was built 1,000 years ago, but that's still, you know, that's yesterday relative to Bodhidharma. But the sites were important. It was important to me to go to the sites. And the Sixth Patriarch's Dharma Seat, about 6 hours north of Hong Kong. And my version of what I think a lot of you experienced at Bodhidharma's cave happened when I went north of Hong Kong to visit the Sixth Patriarch's Dharma Seat. A typhoon hit the weekend that I left Hong Kong to go up to Xiaoguan, which is the name of the town where Wen Ang lived, and I ended up getting stuck in Xiaoguan. The city itself, for any of you who know it, is kind of like Pittsburgh. There's like this rocky ridge of land between two big rivers, and the rivers come together to make another bigger river. And the typhoon had swollen all three rivers. It was just like the river was rising. Like the morning that I went out to Wen Ang's Dharma Seat, there was already like water spilling over the riverbanks. But with this bit of fellowship money I had, I was like taking taxis everywhere. So I thought, well, I'll just get a taxi back another way. So I went out to Wen Ang's Dharma Seat and was coming back, and the river road was completely flooded. So the taxi driver sort of wandered through this crazy, crazy, crazy part of town and finally got me back to my hotel. And there was one sort of desk person at the hotel who kind of spoke English, so I was a little panicked, but I was okay. And she let me know there were no trains, there were no buses, nothing was going back to Hong Kong, I was stuck. So, I'm curious, I'm a reporter, that's what I do. So I said, okay. So I got my camera and I hiked into the center of town. And it was amazing. It was really just, the whole town was both paralyzed and alive at the same time. Like, lights were out, power was off, everything along the riverfronts was flooded. But people were like chilling, they were like hanging out and just watching the river rise. River rise, I didn't even think, oh, the river's, it's still raining, the river's gonna rise. So I wandered around and took pictures, and then the sun was setting, And I thought, well, I should go back to the hotel. Well, like I was saying, you know, the river rises, the river rose, because of typhoon and the rivers were flooded. And all the roads on the riverfront were underwater. And I had to cross the river to get back to my hotel. So, again with the panic. And so I kind of gave up on the nice sort of grid-like modern streets down by the rivers and sort of hiked up the ridge of the town to the old, you know, the sensible Chinese people 1,000 years ago built the town on the high part. And it's only when it got really crowded that they inhabited the low part. So the high part of the ridge was just this maze. It was a maze. I mean, the streets hadn't changed probably since Huanang was around. So I kept getting lost. I kept getting turned around. And it really was like a journey into the heart of darkness. Like at one point, I rounded this corner and there was a mother sow and her piglets in a cage screaming. I was like, oh my God. So I kept on going. And at one point, I rounded a bend in the road and I saw a monk. And most of the monks that I saw in Hong Kong and Shanghai and Beijing and Guangzhou were what I call stunt monks. I mean, I learned from a friend of mine who spoke Chinese that a lot of like poor peasants, poor like farmers come into the cities, and one of the easiest jobs to get is to like let them stick a monk's robe on you for the tourists in the temples. And this monk that I saw in Xiaoguan while the flood waters were rising was not a stunt monk. He was tall and his posture was perfect. His robes were clean and he was moving fast. And before I left on this trip, Gendo gave me a bit of advice. He said, keep heading up, wherever you are, keep heading up. And I had done that at Tiantong. Like, it's so huge, and again with a taxi driver, I paid a taxi driver to drive me from Ningbo to Tiantong. And I didn't have much time, so I kept heading up. So here I am in Xiaoguan, and the only place to go is up. And I heard Gendo in the, I heard Gendo in the back of my mind, follow the monk. Follow the monk. Follow the monk. Follow the monk. So I followed the monk. And he went around a bend and he was gone. But I found myself standing in front of the temple. And it didn't look pretty, it didn't look nice. It was like whitewashed and like there was very little giga on the temple. But there were two placards, one in English and one in Chinese. I opted for English. And reading English, I learned that the place that I had stumbled on because the waters were rising and I had followed a monk was what had been Huaneng's city center back in the day. Who knew? I didn't know. Who knew? And I wandered in and the sign had said that the whole complex, the temple complex, had been taken over by the Red Guard during the Cultural Revolution and divided into apartments. And in the mid to late 90s, a wealthy banker in Guangzhou had bought the temple and had begun to restore it. So it wasn't fully functioning. I mean, it wasn't completely tricked out for the tourist trade like the other temples I'd been to, but there was something appealing about that. And I understood that this is why I haven't read about this, because it's just coming back online. So I didn't find the monk who I had followed there, and the one little guy who was kind of hanging out, greeting people to come in, didn't speak English. I didn't speak Chinese, so I was just like, I gestured, can I wander around? And the Buddha Hall was sort of just being put together, and it was sort of a new, very Hong Kong Buddha. And I stumbled across a little room, and the little room was about half the size of our kitchen. I mean, it was sort of rectangular, and you had to step down into it, and it was sort of rock on the bottom when you stepped down into the little room. And there was sort of a low counter around the room, and on the counter, sort of randomly spaced, were little pots of incense and little puddles where candles had been. And above the counter were compartments upon compartments for scrolls. And who knows what it really is, what it really was. I mean, it could have been, you know, the Tenzo's inventory since 1952 or something like that. I don't know. But my hit on it was, it's not positioned right to be a sutra room. It wasn't close enough to the Dharma hall or any other hall that I could figure out. The closest I could figure out was the scrolls had the names of monks who had been at that temple. And for the first time on my trip, I wept. And I really kind of got lineage, at least as far as I think I can understand it at this point in my practice, I think I got it. So I came back, and it wasn't the first time I had talked to Nyogen about ordination, but it was the last time I talked to Nyogen about ordination. So I'm sitting here with you now, wearing this.